We are back once more for another conversation, this time focused around the seventh landmark called Bond. This is such a fun landmark for me to walk through because of the tremendous power and transformation that can happen here. So I wanted to bring in two men who know something of the power of the bond and that can help us put words to it. Daniel is back again with me after being on all of my previous conversations, and so glad to have you here with us again. And joining us for the first time is my good friend Bruce, who is a financial advisor, happily married for many years, and father of three children, of whom I have taught all three. And Bruce and Danny, y'all have something in common. You don't know this, but each of you have taught me needed skills in the outdoor. Daniel is my fly fishing guide, and Bruce, you've been my duck hunting guide. Anyway, I'm so glad you guys are here to join us in this conversation about the bond. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Let me say again a few introductory comments, and then we'll jump into the conversation. So here is some opening thoughts about the bond. However you want to look at it, we were created to bond. From the first day of our birth, our brains are trying to figure out how to connect to others. This is not an optional exercise. Without this type of connection, babies will die. We have to bond. And as we grow, the ache to connect becomes deeper and wider, as well as the potential obstacles and hardships. The chief one of these is what I call the master destroyer of the bond, and that's shame. It's that universal sense that we're not what we should be, and that deep in our core, we're unworthy, and we sense we have to hide that from others. Yet the longing to bond never goes away. Now, when we turn to Jesus, we also find the importance of the bond. For all of creation was authored out of a bond. In the Christian faith, we call this bond the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And so much of growing in Christ is growing up into this bond, is seeing that Jesus wants us to follow him, to bond with him in a deep fellowship that changes so much of our lives. And he draws us up into the Father himself. In doing so, we become like him through that bond. That's why it's placed as one of the four ascent landmarks. We're rising into this new resurrection life, connected to him in a vital way. In fact, this is how we become real men, by getting really close to Jesus and letting his life rub off onto us. So the process of how we bond horizontally to others and vertically to the Lord is where we want to go with our conversation today. So men, let's get started here. First, let's throw out this question. How have you experienced this sense of bonding with others, whether it's with your father or family or peers? Why don't we start with just some storytelling here? Who wants to begin?
I'll begin. I have experienced it many times over the years with my father, with my brothers, with good friends, with you. I'll go back 30 years to a story in Atlanta when I was just out of college and had been working for a year or so, to my good friend Paul, who was 2 years older than me and married and mature beyond his years, and really took me and several others under his wing to disciple, to mentor, to encourage, to challenge. And so we met weekly for encouragement and Bible study and mentoring. And I was drawn to his strength and his confidence and his maturity. And over the years, he poured a lot of advice and counsel into me. So, in fact, he told me one time a story that I think illustrates what we're talking about. He, in his own college days, in a ministry experience, it was in a small group of some guys. They'd been together for a couple of years. They went on a little weekend getaway, just the guys there in a cabin with a campfire or with a fire going in the fireplace. And they just were having a great time. And he thought, you know, this is about as good as it gets. If I were to die right now, I would have felt like I lived life fully. And so he said, from then on, I felt like I'm in the bonus rounds. And so I had that kind of experience with him. And even though I moved nearly 20 years ago, and we talk infrequently now, that bond is still there. Yeah. That draw is still there, and that sense of brotherhood that's deep it's lasting, and it was forged 30 years ago, and it remains.
Wow, this just shows the power of the bond. I mean, even over all those years, it's something that's just impressed on us so deeply.
And it's a mutually encouraging thing. We experience that kind of bond, and with those that you have that, you can immediately reconnect with and encourage one another, no matter how long much time has passed.
Yeah, you just pick right back up where you left off.
Right.
That's great. Daniel, what about you?
You know, I would say, Bill, this is an area where I feel very fortunate, blessed, because as I think about this topic, I just many names and faces come to mind of relationships, that some that are local, some from my college days. I would say the theme that is through all of that is the fact that there are, you know, a handful of men that I have in my life. I would say you're one of those where we talk about what we're afraid of.
Right.
We talk about what we're excited about. We can laugh. We can cry. We can confess sin. And we have done all those things and kind of discovered through all those different activities that there are people, you know, these guys are for me and believe in me and see in me things that are sometimes hard for me to see and believe about myself.
Yeah.
And so even in your book, talk about the bond up with the Father, you know, we also start to see the impact of people around us in our lives, and that's part of the pushing out and bonding with others. And I would say so much of my spiritual growth has had to include bonds with good friends that remind me who I am and of their love and of God's love.
Yeah. And it's just, and that's critical for our growth in the Lord. We've got to have that. We've got to have those people that know us deeply. We know them deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I was thinking about, you know, the experience of bonding with me, and I could, you know, pull up many different stories, but I'm sitting here with you two men, and I was thinking, I've got great stories with both of you in terms of just bonding, feeling that connection. Bruce, you know, we've been meeting with another friend for, I don't know, how many years, 7, 8, 9 years. And our experience meeting is, you know, we'll start the conversation, just we'll immediately start that about our hearts, where they are. And the next thing you know, an hour's gone, and we've just barely scratched the surface. And that to me is, again, that sign of that bond, that sense of connection, that history that we have, and that we can go to the deep places if we need to pretty quickly, sharing our struggles as well as our joys. You know, both of you men know pretty much everything there is to know about me, and I can't see myself clearly. That's one of the things that I think shame and sin does to us, and I need outside eyes to speak and reflect back to me. And when we're caught up in that kind of bond, we can have that happen. It's a tremendous clarification about who you are and your impact on others. That's, again, part of how this whole bond things work. And Daniel, for you, I think the adventures you've taken me on, fly fishing and taking students up into Canada and Alaska and out to Colorado with some other men, have been tremendously impactful for me. And have allowed me to see you in those situations and your strength and your character, as well as I know you share your weaknesses. So I just thought I have to speak that out here about the bond that I felt with both of y'all. It's been rich and deep and wide and very powerful in my own life. So thank you.
So much. Pleasure. Thank you.
I think Daniel alluded to something that's a real key here, and that is when we're sharing experiences with brothers and we over time develop vulnerability, you would think that we would kind of shrink back from sharing who we really are. However, when we share not only the victories but the struggles with somebody that we're close with, and we have it do so with the confidence that they're for us,
right,
no matter what, I think that's a picture of the Father and Jesus' relationship with us. If we can get it through our minds that He is for us to the degree that He gave His own Son on our behalf, that's really hard to accept. And so learning to model that out with friends, it's intensely powerful and moving at times when you realize, hey, I'm with a brother that knows everything that there is to know about me, and if I'm struggling, he's not going to reject me.
Right.
He's still for me. He wants to help me through it. And so that's part of the deep draw to it.
And he believes in me.
Yes.
I'm not just a project to fix or get over the struggle, but he sees me as bigger than what even the struggle that I'm, you know, going through or talking about.
Yeah. Right. And one of the things that I love about just this sort of brotherhood bond is I love to encourage, because I see the deep strength inside of men that I don't think they see.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanna help pull that out. And that's kind of one of the things I've felt with you two is, you know, going on these adventures we've done, and Bruce, just some of the conversations and some of the risks you've taken in your life. I mean, I feel that deep strength when I'm around y'all, and I just wanna, you know, relish it and enjoy it and call it out even further. So thank y'all so much.
Thank you.
Let's talk about how this is cut off, this bonding. Shame is the destroyer of the bond. The fall of man, shame enters in, and we start hiding, we start masking. So let's talk about how shame has worked in your life or disconnected you from others. And I'm going to start this one off, and I'll say this. Shame has been operative in my life from very early times, and it really sort of spiked, I think, at a time when it's usually very common for it to spike in many people, both young men men and young women in the ages of 12, 13, and 14. We're going through puberty and entering into that time of adolescence. And for me, shame came in three layers. First of all, there was this sense of being shame over my gifts. I always wanted to be the football player, but I didn't have the body type for it. I always wanted to be the student government leader, but I didn't have the confidence to take it on. I always wanted to have somebody else's gifts. And then I was just ashamed of my own body. I just wanted to look like somebody else. And having acne on my chest and on my face, of course, didn't help that. And then there was this just shame over who I was interiorly as a person. I wasn't worthy. There was something deeply wrong with me. And there were a lot of factors why shame became very powerful in my life. I think it's a part of everybody's life, but shame was very powerful in my life, and it seemed to have the last word. And the only way I knew how to deal with it was this sort of compulsive, reordering of myself, reshuffling the deck with different people, sort of trying to appear like whatever I felt like they wanted me to appear as, and not really living out of my deep core, out of my heart. And because of that, I felt like I was going to connect other people because they were going to like me, but the irony is it just further disconnected me. And that was a trajectory. I spent high school, college, early adulthood, and on into marriage until I had to learn to dismantle it. So shame is a huge issue in my life.
For me, you know, I think of different types of shame, shame over sin and kind of the embarrassment of that. You know, it's a whole realm that has, you know, historically played a role in my life. And, you know, the bond to other men and to God has done a lot for me in that. But then other types of shame, you know, shame over when I was younger in middle school, just teasing of classmates about different things. And then on into high school, you know, I remember middle school, and I don't know if I've shared the story before or not, but, you know, kids going to puberty, kids saying, you know, you smell bad or those kinds of stories. And just, it's kind of this awareness of something that you didn't even know. And the message is there's something wrong with you, and everyone can see it but you. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, no.
It's like you walk in with school without any clothes on.
Right.
Like, what's wrong with you?
Right. It's like you're naked and ashamed.
Right.
Exactly. You know. And then even in high school, with people who were friends and did care about me, just different types of teasing where the takeaway, and it was very kind of hidden and subtle, but like...
sarcasm.
Yeah, right. Like, there's something kind of wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And You know, even now, I would say God has really set me free from lots of shame. But even now, I can see, it's funny, I was listening to one of these earlier recordings with a friend a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And if you wonder, if you're listening out there and you're wondering if you wrestle with shame, let me ask you this question. What do you feel when you hear your recorded voice?
That's a great question.
Because as soon as I started talking, I could feel the sweat beads starting to pool on my forehead and just the heat. And I felt so kind of ashamed of how I sounded and how, you know, was I saying something? Was I being silly or stupid? Did I have anything good to say? Did I talk too much? Not enough? You know, all that stuff that kind of dismantles, I think, being who God would call us out to be.
Right.
Right? It's like the message behind shame for me has been, you need to pull back and hide and get quiet. Not in a contemplative way that's good, that leads you to freedom, but in a way of back off, bury something because you're...
Go limp. Be passive.
Exactly. That's a
just
great...
Go limp.
Go limp. That's exactly right.
Yeah. It's funny because I remember the first time I heard I did try to record music and as a songwriter in my early years. I remember one of the first times I started hearing my voice, I just went, you know, it was just like mm-hmm. I was disgusted by it. And again, that's a great picture of we don't have a clear sense of who we are at all.
Yeah.
And having that reflected back to us for the first time when we hear it, we just go, that's not me. I don't like that. And our voice is the same way. That's a great analogy. Great picture of that, Daniel. Bruce, what about you? How is shame operating for you?
You know, when we're talking about shame, there are two aspects that I think about. One is the shame of sin, as Daniel mentioned, and fortunately I've been blessed to be in relationships with you and others over about 35 years where I felt like I could be vulnerable and just deal with that, go to the promises of God's Word, right, and rely on those truths that I am His Son, and that's been paid for, and we're moving on.
We are.
You know, there is a freedom that comes with confession, and there's a victory. We can live in victory over these things. We don't have to be stuck in them.
No.
And part of that is sharing those struggles with brothers and or my wife and getting accountability and moving on and claiming God's promises. There's also a bit of a shame, as Daniel alluded to, about who you are. And a funny story comes to mind. When I was in the ninth grade, my good friend Brett looked at me one day. We were at the gangly stage, and he said, "You're ugly." I went home, looked in the mirror, and I went, "He's right." So you know.
And you still call him a friend.
Yeah, I still call him a friend. So out of that, for years, not just because of that, but during those goofy high school years and just a lack of confidence. Well, I became a Christian right before my senior year in high school, and a fundamental change in my thinking happened, and it was this: wait a minute, God accepts me, and that's forever, and nobody's taking that away. So if somebody else rejects me, sure, that'll hurt, but I'm going to be okay, because the fundamental, most important aspect of my life has already been settled, and I'm accepted, so I can be bolder. That doesn't mean I became bold right away, and I'm still growing in that. It's a progressive thing.
It is.
And I've found that God has used experiences and the encouragement of others over the years to lessen that sense of I'm ashamed of who I am over time. And so that's just part of Him conforming us to the image of His Son. It's a progressive work, because if we're stuck in that, then I think it's a paralyzing thing. Either the shame of sin or the shame of about who we are, it's a paralyzing proposition, and we end up being on the sidelines and not involved with others' lives and doing what God
right.
wants
it's
us
the
to
going
do.
Limp, being passive.
Exactly.
You just pull back, withdraw. Yeah, that's the message. Wow. A lot of similarities here, man. Let's talk about the healing of our shame. And that's, we need to talk about not only horizontal bonding, but let's talk about our vertical bonding with the Father through Jesus Christ. That's really the message of the gospel. And maybe the best way to do this is, again, let's just do a little storytelling. How have you come to feel bonded to Jesus? What has that been like for you? And maybe illustrate that with a story. or two. So, Dan, you, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
Sure. Well, I would say currently, one of the things that I've learned to do just real practically is to take, I used to wince at the thought of a quiet time because it felt like a legalistic duty that made God like me more and made my day better and a hoop to jump through. And so I'd say rather than just kind of wanting to perpetuate that, if other people are wrestling with it, that concept, what I have been learning to do is just to sit, and it might be in my truck in the driveway or laying in bed at night. There's not a set time, but I'll just stop and I'll just say, God, what would you want to say to me right now? And it might be a 5-minute thing, a 20-minute thing. And I'll tell you, there are times when I do that and it just, I'm not aware of much happening. And then there are times when these kind of messages come to my mind and I, you know, and then I'm confused. Is this from God or is this my own brain? But so I, you know, it's not a cut and dry kind of a thing, but I do feel like God has met me in asking, just inviting his messages to me, just wanting to hear from him. A story I want to share though, that involves all of these topics we're talking about. And you've alluded to our Alaska trip a few years ago. You know, I love taking people on adventures and leading and introducing people to new experiences. And when we went that trip to Alaska, there were 6 or 7 high school kids and you and a couple of other adults came with us. And the trick was I'd never been before myself, you know, and here I am leading this trip and everything I knew about Alaska and fishing and the salmon runs and all that was research and other people I knew who had gone. So we had set up this trip, and if you can remember, the first 3 days were just frustrating, just not catching any fish and
no salmon,
and the rivers seemed to be running dry, and I got really down after 2 or 3 days, and I remember waking up maybe 8 in the morning, pulling out of my tent, needing to use the restroom. It had been cold, and there was this kind of, I just went out to use the restroom in the woods there, and there's this little stream of light coming through the trees, and I kind of walked into it and kind of looked up just to kind of warm my body, and literally something in my heart came up where I just said, God, what am I doing wrong? Mm-hmm. And about as audibly as my heart was able to perceive it, I felt God say these words, you're doing great. You're doing fine. You don't need to be doing anything differently. Just keep doing what you're doing. And it felt like just such an affirmation of me. Because, you know, I was feeling shame because all these other people, you know, had these expectations that I'd given them and it wasn't happening and what's wrong with me and I'm just such a fool for even thinking I could do this. Yeah. And just feeling God's affirming voice in that moment of, you're doing great. You know, just felt like what I would say to my 6-year-old son when he's working on his math problem. You know, you're doing fine. Just, you know, keep at it. Yeah.
And interestingly enough, that was the day we started catching salmon.
It really was, interestingly.
And that was amazing, those last couple of days we pulled in.
Well, we cast our nets on the other side of the boat, and apparently that works, I've heard. So.
It does. Bruce, what about you? How have you experienced bonding with the Lord?
I think just consistency of trying to spend some time with him every day. And I don't mean that in a legalistic way, as you referred to, but just trying to have an active conversation throughout the day and be reminded of truths. That's going to involve some reading of the scriptures.
Sure.
It's going to be some
Absolutely.
Time just to pause. I don't do enough of just being quiet and listening. And one of the things, though, that I've been working on the last couple of years is just trying to change my view of what God's view of me probably is. So, as you and I have talked about before, the parable of the prodigal son, I go back to the image of the father running to meet the prodigal. And my image of God's view of me often has been that of a stern father with his arms folded, shaking his head and saying, well, you know, he's mine, but I just have so much more for him, but he's a little bit of a knucklehead. He's just not getting it. And so this kind of bit of a disapproval.
Right.
And so
not quite making the grade.
Not quite making the grade, and you know, look at what he could be doing. But he's not. And that's kind of paralyzing in and of itself. And so to think on the the truth of the matter is that he loves me so much that he is willing to give all for me.
Everything.
And that's represented well in that parable by the father running to meet the wayward son instead of folding his arms in disgust and giving the son a big hug. Well, that's the way I've begun to meditate on God, thinking about my relationship with him, is that come to me if you're weary and heavy laden. I'll give you rest. Come. It's okay. It's an approving kind of view. And so
it's an inviting.
It's inviting. And that's helping me to bond more and get out of this kind of works-oriented, God must be displeased mindset that many of us live under.
Yes, a cloud of that. Mine is very, very, in some ways, very similar to both of what y'all have shared. And if shame being such a critical piece of my own life, one of the great realizations, discoveries I realized was that delight trumps shame. It's one of the few forces. In fact, it may be the only force. The feeling that will trump shame and drive it out and weaken its hold on us. And one of the things that I started doing was simply taking scriptures that speak about God's delight in his people. And I think about when I delight in somebody or I just love their presence, or I those are just small echoes of the Lord's delight in his children. As we come to him through Christ and what he wants. And when I sit, sometimes I'll take some of those scriptures like Zephaniah 3, where it speaks about the Lord takes great delight in us. He quiets us in his love. He rejoices over us with singing. And I won't try to feel anything towards the Lord. I'll simply sit and try and feel perhaps a little of what he feels towards me. And over time, that sense of delight has just begun to vaporize all of that shame. And when the shame gets vaporized, your heart is open to bonding. It's remarkable how that happens. And there is a progressive closeness I feel with the Lord. And out of that, I'm learning, wow, I want to obey these things, not because I'm supposed to or obligation or compulsory. It's like, I want to. Mm-hmm. I want to do this out of my Father's delight in me. And so that sense of closeness, that vertical bonding, has really not only driven out the shame, but has also heightened the sense of being close to the Father. So that's how that sort of vertical bonding piece, again, tying it in back in with the horizontal bonding and overcoming shame itself. Y'all, we've just scratched the surface. But we are out of time, and we're going to have to call it quits on this one. I want to thank both of you for being a part of this. You guys are part of my band of brothers as well as my bond of brothers, and I'm so glad you've been able to speak your voice today and on this very important topic. So thank you for being here. Thank you all for listening in, and we'll be doing another conversation, this time on landmark number 8. On marriage. We call it Mate. I hope you'll join us for then. Thank you, and this is Bill Deldo signing off for now.